I try to sometimes just let it go completely. I'm just like, can I think about nothing? Why am I thinking about nothing? Can I actually just think about nothing? Can I actually just be here now? And I will go into gratitude around just, this is everything. This is as good as it gets.
Michael, thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Danny.
You know, when somebody lists their values on their own personal website, that says to me, that's my type of person. Because the process of going through and telling yourself and then telling the world, this is what I care about, is something that I resonate with. Even though I don't think I'd do that for my own self, but it inspired me and it made me want to think and ask myself, what do I value and what do I care about? And so I'd love to go through some of your values and some of the things that make you you and the things you care about so that people can have a greater understanding for who you are as a person and hopefully help inspire them in some way to live a life that is more true to them.
Let's do it. And it's interesting what you said, just the meta value of even having values, whatever they are, I think is a helpful exercise.
I mean, you have it on the top. You said listing values. The most important value is the meta value of knowing what your values are and being unafraid to stand up for them.
There you go.
With being unafraid to stand up for them, have you, when you say that, was there any specific situation that was coming to mind when you said that?
I've gotten into different situations in life where I wish I'd been more vocal on certain aspects, and like with, it's very specific. So I think there's instances with my wife, there's instances, oh, so with my co-founder, we get along super well. I get along super well with my wife, super well with my co-founder in different ways. And there's been instances where like I was maybe going with their flow more. And part of like, I think with my co-founder, for instance, who I get along super well with, but there were times where like, he has a very strong personality and I have a strong personality, but there's certain times where almost like avoid the conflict. I just like went with the flow. And I realized afterwards, I was like, you know what? I did us both a disservice because we both want to win at the end of the day. Like that's the thing that really matters to us. And so he might've pushed a certain way and I didn't push hard enough on a certain way to align to my truth, and we both lost from it. Like it would have led to a better outcome if I had been more vocal instead of not saying it. So an example, for instance, is that we've gotten a lot more friendly on like giving product samples away. There's a way to look at your business, which is like, it's not incorrect, but it's like charge everyone, like have people pay or make sure you're always getting some like, you know, tit for tat or like trading up or like make sure people are serious. The fact is like when you give away a lot of samples, sometimes you get taken advantage of, or sometimes it's a waste of money or something. You're just pissing into the wind. It's like, it's hard to attribute it. Oh, you gave out $10,000 of samples last month. Like what did we get back from it? And like, my stance, it almost comes from like a karmic sense of just wanting to like give out into the world. But that also sounds like that can come across like unbusinesslike or just like you're pissing into the wind. And I think on that specific argument, it took me longer than I would have liked. Like I should have defended that value sooner to like be more generous with giving out samples of our product out in the world. And what really helped in that specific instance to click for me was just a lot of pattern matching to a lot of other founders, a lot of other startups, a lot of other just big companies that used to be startups, that like the best thing that you could possibly, the best marketing dollar you could possibly spend is sips to lips, is like sampling your product out there in the world. And I think seeing that, because again, it's a very hard to like, especially if you're coming from like a computer science background, growth hacky background, it's like every dollar needs to make you at least a dollar back. Like, let me measure it. This Facebook ad, click, click, click. Like you want to see everything like really work. It's very hard to say like, oh, we did sampling and like that was really good for awareness and the brand. And it can come across as very like unquantifiable, but that like once you hear enough, I think business is actually a lot more art than science. And when you hear a lot of these other artists talking about the importance of just getting your product out into the world, then that helped me rationalize it in more of like a business, like objective way of like, oh, 10 out of 10 other food or beverage startups are like dying for every opportunity to like sample out their product. Like that helped me like get more solid on the point there.
How would you, it's interesting because like in some sense you do need to listen to other people and get their, the examples of the past to inform your decisions of the future. But in other sense, you knew the right answer or you felt like you knew the right answer internally and you used the justification of what other people have done as a way to go forward. How could you in the future look towards your own voice and follow your own intuition faster?
There's a moment of introspection probably inside of why I already felt that way that maybe was already inside of me to articulate that I didn't need to go do further research on that if my intuition is do sampling. Because here's the thing. With product sampling, if it doesn't work, if giving people your product, having them try it doesn't fundamentally grow your business, it's not a sampling problem. It's a problem that like your product is not good. And so you'd actually would rather hear that sooner. Like it's like the accelerationist argument. Like if that's going to bankrupt your business, like you're already bankrupt. Like your business already doesn't work. Like if you're selling Oreos and like you give people Oreos and they're not like, that's a good cookie. Like you stop selling your cookies. They suck. Like if you're not confident behind what you're doing to like hand people, if you can't like be Gatorade and hand out cups of Gatorade at the sideline of a football game for free, first time is free. Like get people excited about it. If you can't do that, then the rest of your business doesn't even make sense. I guess to answer your question, like there were certain like maybe senses of intuition inside of me. And partly it's some arguments like cannot actually be won in the logical realm. And you actually need to go back to values, which is part of why I wrote all of this down, because there's certain axioms of your life. You just can't really argue why it matters or doesn't matter. Like it just is, something just are, and there's no, you're not going to like logic around it there. You can just fundamentally, you can fundamentally believe that a meaningful life is a life where you're building stuff, where, hey, wouldn't it be cool to make the Golden Gate Bridge or write the next great American novel or direct a cool movie, like, and to build stuff, to be industrious, to like make cool stuff in life is like a life. Well, that is a stance that I take that someone else could absolutely not take. They can be like, that's nonsense, that, you know, you're just, you're not defined by your output. Like you're part of the capitalist cog in the machine and you're blah, blah, whatever. You can have like a counter stance, and there's a fine counter stance for a person to take. I'm never going to win an argument with that person. They're never going to win an argument with me. And so if I'm in an argument, it can just come back to like, well, okay, this is my value. No amount of books and this and that. Oh, Adam Smith's this says, like, look at the way the economy, like no argument's going to convince that person. So it just would come back to knowing your values. And I think that you can also get to some truth with other people, because like maybe they share values in a way. Maybe you're disagreeing on the specific instance, but if you go back down to values and like, hey, don't we both agree that like X, Y, Z, then it's like, oh yeah, sure. And then you say, okay, well, in the specific instance that we're talking about, I'm really just trying to transpose that value onto the world. Like you're arguing with your significant other, your business partner, whatever. I mean, if we're talking about giving away product samples, for instance, it could be like, you just have a value on like, hey, we're going to like bias towards generosity. And that's, I can't argue that. I can't, like, that's just a way to live life. Yeah. There's no rational behind it. So like if something's a coin flip in my life, like I always like 51% will bias it towards the more generous option. Like if, so we're not going to prove if sampling works or doesn't work, but like it seems a little bit more generous. So, and then it's like, if my business partner also agrees on that, like, okay, we like to be just generous people. And there's some fuzziness around whether this particular business initiative works or doesn't work, but it feels more generous to do it than to not do it. okay, like we have this shared value. We're not going to get to like perfect rational answer on the end thing. But if we can come back to a value that we both agree in, then the problem kind of solves itself.
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting, like you saying you have a computer science background, because the idea of like, of oneness and like having that as a core value, oneness.
Yeah.
That to me, like there's like some, there's some tension there between like the computer science rationalist and the we're all connected.
Yeah.
Is there a tension there?
To me, there is not.
And why is that?
I don't think oneness has to go in opposition to rationality.
Tell me more. You're speaking my language now.
Yeah. That what I mean by oneness is that we're all playing the same game. It's that when you go through airport security and you get like beeped because you get the random whatever and the TSA person is wanding you and whatever, swabbing your eye, like you're like, dang, this is annoying. But you have to realize that like the TSA person who's wanding you, like they're doing the best they can too. They're another person living their life. And if you were in their shoes, you'd be doing exactly what they're doing. And it's just a dance. They're dancing, you're dancing, and like you're playing tennis with someone else. Like you want to crush them. You want to win. You want to like, you really want to win, but you also love them and appreciate them. Cause without the other person smacking the ball back, there is no tennis match. You're just smacking a ball into the air. Like there's no there there. Like you need, it's all a dance. And if you were on the other side of the net, you'd be trying to crush you. So like you can't be mad at them if they win a point because they're doing what you're trying to do to them. Like you're, it's something I always come back to with if I'm ever at a spot in life where I feel like, you know, a certain person is annoying, or it's like, well, would I be doing the same if I was in their exact spot? You're in a tough negotiation. I don't know. You're like, people have like beef with their landlord. And it's like, well, imagine you own this building and you're trying to protect your interest. And like, this is property and, you know, you have a family, you're stressed out, you invested a lot here, the rental income is important to you, whatever, like whatever the situation is. If you were in their spot, wouldn't you be doing the same thing? And then, okay, some things in life are just fundamentally opposed. Like there might just be this tennis player A, tennis player B are fundamentally opposed, but in a way that's, it's more, there's something to me that's just like beautiful and delightful about it. And it doesn't have to, like, you don't have to hate the other tennis player. You can actually love the other tennis player, but also want to win very badly and have that like deep will to drive while also loving the guy on the other side of the net. And so that's what I mean by oneness, is that like we're all doing the same thing. And even when you find yourself on the opposite side of the net from someone, you're still the same person. You're still the same, like you're still the universe experiencing itself.
Yes.
You're still just this whatever initial spark of energy that led to it all. You're an instantiation of it that feels very super real to you. And it also feels very super real to the other 8 billion other people. And yet, like, it's not to say your thing doesn't matter, like that you're, like your experience is totally unique and special, but everyone feels that way too. It's a duality. There's a duality to it for sure, where you're part of the oneness, but you also have, I think, a responsibility to live your own best life. That is your own, like, you know, you're in your own, you know, meat bag of life that has your certain amount of time on planet Earth, and do the best that you can. So there's a duality, and I think that's okay too, that there's oneness and as well as like trying to be your best version of yourself. And then I think, I don't know, I think rationality is a, it's just a tool. Computer science, engineering, building bridges, it's just a tool. Like I it's a way to be effective in the world around us. It's a way to get things done, create value for yourself, for other people. It's just, you know, we figured out certain things about the way that the world works. And if you can manipulate those, and you can, then you can build interesting things and get leverage to make the world a better place. So yeah, you like be more adept with the tools of computer science, or, you know, other like rationality more broadly, if we're talking about that. Yeah.
What experiences of yours most contributed to the feeling of oneness?
I can't remember ever not seeing it. that as a kid, I would always just think about, I would just get lost. I would like see another person and be like, what's it like to be that person? I would just like get lost in my imagination of like what that person's like, what their life is. Like, what are they doing at, right after this? Where are they going? What do they do right before this? Like, what is it like? And there was no like single click for me. I think just realizing that everyone's job is hard. Everyone's trying their best. Like,
it's a pretty enlightened thought to come out of the womb with.
I guess it's one of those thoughts where maybe you do come out of the womb with it and then society quickly like beats it out of you. And then you have to go like catch it again back. But like, maybe it wasn't beaten out of me by society or yeah, maybe my parents nurtured it and I gravitated towards it, you know, like I think.
How did your parents nurture that belief?
I don't know if they made a concerted effort on that specific belief. I mean, my parents are super friendly. They are super, like they care a lot. My parents do a lot of advocacy work. They do a lot of work in like civil rights. So like my mom's an attorney and she represents people who are abused by the police in Chicago. So she always has lawsuits against the, there's a lot of like mistreatment of normal civilians by police. A lot of times it's like low income people, it's minorities. And my mom has always chosen to be on like that advocacy side that like, yeah, it's like the justice system only works as well as like the least, the least amount of justice served to a person. Like the most, if there's any part of the system that's broken, like we should all feel bad about it. That's very much my parents thinking that there's some good saying around this that escapes me that like, it's only as fair as like the way that the least fairly person is treated. It's something like that, that like, if you, how would you want to be treated if you were in that situation? Yeah. Like if you were low income, low education, like the police just come in your house and start grabbing stuff without a warrant. It's like, you know, how would, like that doesn't seem fair. Like how would you want to be treated, defended? Like, so my parents always had that level of this empathy and advocacy. If anything, I went more like, I think I held on to that, but I've also gone more like, I'm trying to really build a company and like make a big impact, like create a lot of value, which I guess my parents created their own sense of value, their own definition of what value means in society. I guess I've gone more like, just like strict, like I want to create like dollars in the bank, like create shareholder value for my company. Like I still holding on to sense of compassion for other people. Like I see it as like, I want to do something great for the world inside of a vessel that itself can like is financially self-propagating.
Yeah.
Patagonia founder Yvon Chouinard talks a lot about this where like, he's like, he could have been like shaking a sign in the picket line about like environmentalism. He's like in his book, Let My People Go Surfing, he talks about, he was like the most reluctant business person ever because he didn't like business people. He didn't want to get into business. He wanted to save the environment, save the salmon hatcheries. And he realized that in order to actually do that at a global scale, he needed to start a business that could have like, you know, multi-million, billion dollars of impact on the planet. So he started the idea of B Corps, and Patagonia is a B Corp, and there's all these other B Corps. And he like really ran it as a, his way of making a dent in the universe was to create a company inside of the capitalist system that was effective at capitalism and that used its extra profits to solve the problems that he wanted to solve. And also just use like the way that they manufacture clothing. I'm not trying to make this a total Patagonia ad. We love Patagonia, but I'm just saying that he made a company to make a dent in the world, as opposed to going like a nonprofit route, or as opposed to like writing, you know, letters to the editor all day. He decided to go for this like bigger impact through creating a corporate entity.
Yeah, that makes sense. And it makes sense that you would see what your parents did and then try to create value your own way. It's interesting. What came to mind for me was Mike Posner talking about how every time he is in the world, he harms people in unexpected ways. When he goes to retreat, he realizes like the ways in which he harmed people. And by like, even Mike Posner is a very conscious person, and he's like very much like wants to do the best for everyone. But at the same time, he's saying to himself like, oh, I really should have texted this guy back, or I really should have, you know. So like, do you take breaks? Do you take sabbaticals? Do you take retreats? How does that work while trying to build this massive company for building huge shareholder value?
I run a lot. I take these mini sabbaticals every day. I don't know if that's a cop-out answer. I really want to take more dedicated time off. I get by with at least every day. I'm just out in nature, breathing hard for an hour, 2 hours, sometimes longer, just like getting, usually no phone, no nothing, just like getting in touch, like resetting my orientation on like, what do I want to do? Like, okay, all these things flying around, like what's my stance? Like, what am I doing in the world? Like, it's important for me to be playing offense, coming to the day with an agenda. And so it's helpful on a daily basis to have that just like space to think it through and be like, okay, what are we going to do? What are we gearing up for today?
Talking about running, of course.
Yeah. Like inside of my running, that's what I think about. My mind just goes to it naturally. It's like, all right, what are we doing today? And ideas flow from there. And yes, this is a good, productive, there's something special about running. Like maybe if I was really good at just sitting, I think it's okay. I will not even say I think it's easier for me, and I think a lot of other runners, to go run for an hour and a half than it would be for me to just sit for an hour and a half.
What are you hiding from?
I don't know if I'm hiding from anything. I think when I run, the movement lets my mind, it like brings something out of my mind. And by not having any inputs, there's no like screen, there's no nothing. I'm like, I'm able to let something flow through me. I mean, it is a good question. Like how would it be different if I sat? I think I don't know. I wonder how it'd be different if I just sat for an hour and a half. I mean, it would be like 3 hours because I'm still going to go for my run. So I'm curious how, okay, I'm going to run and then I got to sit for an hour and a half and then I'm going to start my day. It's hard. I don't know. It feels hard to grab that amount of time. At least with running, I can really feel a sense of progress towards running. And that feels important. So I'm getting like two for one. I'm getting like mental clarity and I'm getting like better at running. Mm. And that feels important.
So what about running as a spiritual practice for you?
It's just the feeling, man. It's the feeling. There's something, I want to go run right now. There's something like.
You could do it tomorrow, 7 a.m. at a run club.
Shout out, yeah.
Tuesdays at 7 a.m., 4 a.m. run club in Austin, Texas.
Let's go. There's something about it that's, I don't know, it's the rhythm, it's the breathing, it's seeing the horizon, just like staring at, how much else in the day are you just staring at the horizon for like an hour plus on end, just like staring at something, and it's so calming, and I think it's just so natural that your body snaps into this state of just flow, and it's fun. I think what clicked for me, what really got me into running, I think it takes a certain amount of fitness to be able to just like cruise at any pace, like, for an hour, and then you can get faster and faster. But to me, there's not really been a difference in my mental side of things to being able to cruise at like an 8 minute pace, 7 minute pace, getting to a 6 minute pace. Like there's no, I think mentally it's all been the same. Literally, like I feel like the inner dialogue is the same. It's just you're kind of breathing, pushing, and you're feeling like good. And then physically you get faster, faster over time of doing that. But like mentally, it's, I think, exactly the same. And so that tells me that there's something fundamental about it that has nothing to do with like how good of a runner you are.
So what is the mental dialogue?
There's so much.
It's the same.
Yeah.
It's the same every time. So.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's the same in broad strokes every time, which is like, you know, I float. So I run a lot. I run 80 miles a week. Like I'm running every day, like 10 plus miles a day. Like, and it comes from, I think I waver between, like, I'll start thinking about things, start thinking about work and like problems I want to solve and ideas. I like getting a lot of ideas, a lot of like, oh, what, like, would be cool to do this. Here's a cool tagline. Here's a cool, like, I just had an idea the other day. You know how a lot of podcasts have like a sound logo, like a audio brand intro. Yeah. It's like a certain, like, just cool sounding sound. Like, think of your favorite podcast. It, like, has this cool sound to it. And that, like, there's something really iconic for my uh-huh. product, Ketone IQ, that you crack it and you go glug, glug, glug.
Yeah.
And, like, that certain sound that, like, crack, glug, 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 that, like, I don't know why that came to me in that moment. It's just like, oh, cool. Make that crack, glug, 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 like, cool. So that's just stories help paint the picture. Like, that's such a random little detail of some random little corner on my business. There's 1,000 other details, but I don't, for some reason, like, that detail just came into razor sharp focus when I was running. And I wasn't even like trying to force that idea. I wasn't like thinking about it. So
where do ideas come from?
I don't know. Like, I don't know. I think my mind just wanders through whatever's there. I feel like the whole day is like loading too much information into my mind all the time. There's too much going on always, always, always. And then when I run, it's my subconscious just kind of like slowly unties this knot, or like slowly unshuffles this crazy deck of cards, and like the more important things will like percolate up. And that's really important time for me. And then, okay, so that's one mode of thinking. And the other mode of thinking is I try to sometimes just let it go completely. I'm just like, can I think about nothing? Why am I thinking about nothing? Can I actually just think about nothing? Can I actually just be here now? And I will go into gratitude around just, this is everything. This is as good as it gets. Mm-hmm. There is nothing else. Who cares what my audio sound logo, like, it's like, okay, why do I even care about that? I care about that because I want to make a good podcast. Why do I care about making good content? I don't know. So I can run a company and more people care. Why? So that you can like live and have a cool life and be an entrepreneur. Why? So that I can do what I want during the day. Why? So that I can go on runs and be in nature. And then it's like, okay, wait, I'm literally here right now. Like, why do I care about the thing I think? Like, I've already arrived. I always feel that. I often feel that way on runs. It's like, I go down this mode of thinking where I'm like problem solving, ideas percolating. Yes, yes, yes. I think that's all good. But sometimes it's too much. Sometimes I'm just like, I get in arguments in my head with people that are not there on the run with me. It's like, yo, just, like, it, just be here now. Like, this is it. Like, this is as good as it gets. Like, there's sun, breathing, nature, just good. Just feels good to breathe. Feels good to move. And I think to me, I tell myself, like, if I can't be happy right here, right now, I'm missing something. Like, there's not, everything is laid out for me here. Like, all of the existence of humanity is here in this moment. I need to soak it up. I need to orient myself to gratitude and loving in this moment. And you can just, I can just completely change my outlook on the world. Instead of being like out of breath and my legs hurt or whatever, it's like I become, you just stay with it for a second. You just like really think about gratitude and really just keep staring at the horizon. And like, and then I feel like it's the most ecstatic. Like, I just start like smiling, and I don't know if I'm crying or if it's the wind. It's just like, you just feel very, I feel very present, very ecstatic. Like, I just like 11 out of 10 happy when I get into that certain mode when I'm running.
That sounds transcendental, and I strongly relate to exactly what you're talking about. How can people achieve that state more often?
Run. Run slower,
yeah,
and longer.
Do you think everyone who runs achieves that state?
No.
So what makes you different?
Run slower.
I'm like talking to like the equivalent of like an Indian guru, and he's like, run slower.
Run slower. that I think running doesn't need to be complicated, and it helps you a lot to run slower and longer and more relaxed. There's a way of running that is, I was fortunate to tap into really early in my running career of just this way more relaxed way of running that. And I often put a priority on that. For most of the runs I do, my goal is to be relaxed. So like, if that means going a little bit slower, if that it's like relax your shoulders, relax your jaw, let yourself fall forward. Like focus all your energy on like pushing back, and then just let your legs like fall back to where they need to be. The legs will figure out where they need to go. Like don't try to put your legs forward and reach. Just like focus on pushing the ground away from you like you're on a skateboard, and then let the heel go up and let it just like come back down. Try not thinking about bringing your foot back to where it needs to be. Just push like you're on a skateboard and let your foot come back. Like you lean forward and your foot's just going to like catch your fall, and then you push again and just breathe and try to like twist a little bit from your abs so that like your legs aren't even doing all the work. Try to just get a little like get your whole body involved and like torquing around it in a nice way, and relax your ankles. Make sure you're using your whole leg. Don't just be using like your knees and your quads. Like really like use your, you really want to like, I always think about that skateboarding analogy to use it again. Just like really like you want to use your glutes. You really want to be like pushing. You want like your whole leg. It's almost like a, I'm just thinking about like a calligrapher or something. Like the whole stroke of your whole chain, of your whole leg, and like spread out the work. Like don't force it all into your like tippy toes, or your ankles, or your calves, like or your quads. Just like use your whole leg. I'm saying a lot here. It's just like relax, spread out the effort, breathe, and then get to a spot where you're really comfortable on that. What I would say to someone who's getting into running is like optimize for being able to run really easy and be able to do it for like an hour, and then be able to have some of those transcendental moments, be able to really like just relax, be at peace. Don't be like fighting the splits. Like nobody cares. If you go from 8:45 to 8:30, like nobody cares. Just go run a 9-minute mile and do it in pure bliss. Like just go a little slower. And because when you find that pure bliss, then guess what? You're going to want to do it tomorrow and the next day, And then like, I'm at a spot I've just been doing it for so long where like my bliss mode is a lot faster than my bliss mode used to be. And now, yeah, like I do crank it. Like I'm not like constantly blissed out. Like there are like 1-2 days a week, I'll really crank it because I'm trying to get better too. Like, but a lot of the miles, a lot of like the interstitial miles are just like, and a lot of what I really love running, I like the hard stuff too. It's fun. But I think what I really love about running is that mental reset and that being able to get into bliss mode, which you have to be at like a certain, you can't be total fight or flight. You can't be like absolutely gunning the engine. You got to be at that, you know, that zone 2 level, that like just you're cruising. Did you ever like when you're driving somewhere, like you just don't like you're in like one of the middle lanes and you're not trying to pass anyone. You have cruise control on. My car has this feature where it just like follows a car in front of me by like, and you just press it, but you like give it more distance. And I don't care. I'm not trying to get there. I'm not trying to drive 76 instead of 72. I don't care. I'm optimizing for like happy, chill, relaxed, not thinking that hard about it. And like run at that same speed too.
Life at that same speed.
Live your life at that same speed. That's the ultimate goal.
How do you integrate that to your life?
Keep showing up. That the ability to do things at that lower frequency where you're like enjoying it and you're relaxed inside of it is going to give you like so much more longevity. If you got like a blood vessel about to burst in your head every time you're driving from point A to point B and like you got to pass this car and all these guys in the fast lane are too slow as you're going in like the next lane over and you're passing people on the where you shouldn't be and then it's like, yo, it's like you're just running hot. And if you take that analogy into life in general, it's like, well, it's like, I don't know, you're running a team. It's like, yo, yeah, you can, I guess, always squeeze a little bit more out of people by yelling at them. But then like people are going to quit. Like people aren't going to have a good time. People aren't going to like, you could yell at someone and they'll do like task A a little bit faster. But then like, you also have to know like task B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L, all that they're also doing that you're not micromanaging them on. They're now saying like, F that, like my boss is like a prick. It's a constant exercise to work on. Like, how do you just tread a little bit more lightly so that like you want to push? Like, I'm not saying stay at home and sit on your couch either, right? That's not what we're saying. Like you're still going out for a run. You're still going from point A to point B. You're still like doing the thrust of the thing. You're doing it in a way that is lets you tread a little bit more lightly, and then you get joy out of it, and then you do it. Then you can do it again and 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 again. And then 435 episodes later, you're good at it. It's like it's going to take you 7 years to get good at it. So what really matters, the optimization to solve for, is how do I do this for 7 years? How do I show up every day for 7 years? And if that means I got to dial it down 10% today, that's fine. Because if that's going to let you show up tomorrow and again and again and again, then that's where you're really going to win. Like blowing it out, running hot today, and then you got to like take a day off. Like you're just stressed. You're not living your life well. That's going to interrupt your compounding interest. Like you want to keep. It's like if you think about the savings analogy, right? Like you're better off. Just making up numbers. Like if you can put in $100 a month into your savings account. Or if that feels like a stretch to you and some months you miss it, like you'd be better off just committing to 50 and actually hitting it every single month. That's the analogy for like, I think this whole thing in life, like hit something, just be really consistent and honest with yourself and keep hitting it. And then like the compounding of hitting it all of the time is what's going to actually pay the dividend back versus, in running, there's no one day, one run that makes you a hero. There's nothing like it. The only thing that matters is like consistently showing up, and same thing in business, same thing in so many things in life. So you got to find that vibration, that level of vibration where it's like got enough intensity where you're making forward progress, but you're not running too hot.
Yeah. Yeah. There's so much there, and it leads me to ask about, you know, moments when you've felt like you were running too hot, because it's like, we could say this, that it's about consistency. But then like, what's the truth of it? What's the moments when we're pushing too hard, when we look back and be like, oh, I really shouldn't have pushed that hard. What are those for you?
Yeah. And sometimes there's times you don't push hard enough. It's hard. Like there's
the never ending balancing act.
Exactly. Exactly. If it was so easy to just like try a little bit less hard, it's like, well, I think there's pushing hard and then there's being effective. And what you really want to be effective. And sometimes pushing hard is the way. One of my values is pacing, that sometimes it's correct to go fast and sometimes it's correct to slow the frick down.
Yeah.
And those are both completely true. Even take the most absolutely aggressive, take your Michael Jordan, take your most just aggressive, whatever, Wall Street, just like absolute gangster, like they will tell you about the importance of of being patient sometimes and the importance of being aggressive other times, that the way that people achieve mastery is like, it's, you can't write it all one way or the other. And I think sometimes people want to like ascribe their personality, like, oh, I'm a really chill person, or like, I'm a really aggressive, I'm a dog. Like, I'm a, blah, blah. And what I realize is that
both.
It's both. And that the true wizardry, the true like mastery is being excellent at both and being able to dial into the modality that the situation calls for. And that, I'm saying this as a student of the universe trying to figure this out. That's just what I've seen. Like, you got to be able to like chill the hell out, and you got to be able to dial it down to zero. You got to be able to dial it up to 11, and you got to have the ability to do both. I have a 2-year-old daughter. I've learned so much from her. And you learn from her. Like, hey, the only way, if people have kids out there, they'll know exactly what I mean. And if you haven't had kids yet, this may be hopefully helpful, is like, you cannot calm a crying baby unless you yourself are calm. So your baby's crying. You can't, if you come in there like pissed off, upset, oh, I was answering emails, I was on the blah, 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 they're going to like, they're less emotionally mature than you are by a lot. Like they will, a young child is going to match to your energy. So you're going to hold them on your chest, and you need to slow your heart rate down, and then they will hear it and feel it and smell it, and they will pick up what you are putting down. They will emotionally model to where you're at. But okay, cool, you have some important email to get to, or your team was about to score a touchdown, whatever you were trying to go and do, let it go. Like, you need to be here now. You need to like bring it down, bring your energy down to zero, and then your child is going to match you at where you're at. And then you're going to put your child back to bed, and then you're going to go to the other room, and you're going to dial the F up back to 11, right? You're going to go back into the boiler room. You're going to, buh, 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 buh. And you need to have, I think that's a good, the right analogy for life. Like, okay, you're going to go back and you're going to write the best damn business email that you were about to write. You're going to call that person back. You're going to whatever, like, and you're going to hop in. They both matter, and that both of those modalities matter tremendously. And you have to be able to navigate.
Yeah. And it's interesting how the running analogy too, because the more you push yourself running, the higher your heart rate can go, which also means the lower your heart rate can go, which is a fascinating thing in talking about the dualities, because you push yourself hard, well, then you get the benefits of having a lower heart rate.
It's huge. Like, you ever meet these like pro combat sports fighters?
I was just thinking that.
Like, some of the friendliest people I know.
The most calm.
Yeah.
Because they push themselves so much, and they know they could beat the hell out of anyone that they talk to.
It's wild. It's just like super, super based. Like, they just know.
Runners too. I'm sure it's the same way.
Yeah, because I think when you're like actively signing yourself up for that level of pain, that like you're cranking it so hard that you're able, like, you don't need to let it out in some other area. You already let it out. You already let it out on the mat or the run this morning or tomorrow morning or whatever. Like, you already have an outlet for it that's much more productive than like whatever, whoever you're about to like blow up at. I think a lot of, and again, I'm not, he without sin cast the first stone. Like, I don't want to even come across as like I have it figured out. I think in more, you know, based moments of introspection, I see some things, but I also like F up a lot too, you know? So as I'm, but one thing I've seen is that you can sometimes outlet your energy at the wrong person or wrong situation. And I think one thing I learned a lot with, I think my wife helped me realize this a lot too, because there's like the person one human on the planet I'm absolutely closest with. And then also, I mean, everyone can inspect their own relationship with their significant other, that like sometimes that's like the person that you almost have the easiest time being mean to,
because you know that person loves you no matter what.
Yeah. And they're right there and they're close, and that like, yeah, they love you no matter what. And you can find yourself being like very whack to like the exact last person in the world that you should be being whacked to, and that what you meant to be doing instead was to be saying XYZ to whatever, like the someone that you're doing business with or some other situation, and that you didn't say it then, you didn't let it out of your system, you didn't go on your run this morning, like you didn't put it out there in a productive way to like actually address what it was. And so then you have this pent up energy that you're like swinging around to the wrong people in your life. It's like you can almost think of the, like, I mean, this happens at work too, where sometimes like the most helpful people get the most work piled on, and it's like not fair to them, where they're the most helpful. So then they end up dealing with the most punches. Whereas the person who's like kind of grumpy and bad at their job and no one wants to talk to them, like no one tries to assign them any work, versus like the friendly, smart, like thorough person gets everything assigned. It's like it's not fair. And I think just trying to correct that energy and just address, I mean, in that situation, it's like you have to actually have the uncomfortable direct conversation with the person who's like, maybe you're afraid to work with or whatever. Like, you need to actually just talk to that person instead of like giving the diligent, pleasant person like the 11th different thing on their plate.
I mean, one of your favorite quotes is, a person's success in life can usually be measured by the number of uncomfortable conversations he or she is willing to have, by none other than Tim Ferriss, one of the godfathers of podcasting. So, yeah. So like, how do you have difficult conversations?
I drop into the mode of, this is performance art. I have a certain role, job. My job is, I'm the CEO of my company, and that has certain responsibilities, certain things I have committed to and agreed to, and that everyone that I've hired or everyone that I've taken investment dollars from, they have a certain set of expectations. And part of that set of expectations needs to be like, I need to fight on behalf of the business for core things that really matter. So those can be internally, like setting a higher standard of excellence, or pushing someone to having an uncomfortable conversation with someone if they're not meeting the mark. Letting someone go if they're not meeting the mark. It can mean like, you know, externally pushing people, negotiating, like saying no to things, really pushing people on certain deals, or not, like not doing certain other deals, like pushing, you know, a deal is about to close, but it's really not perfect. And like having that last uncomfortable conversation of like, look, really need to do it this way. Like really need to, having those uncomfortable conversations. I always put myself into, imagine I'm not me. Imagine I'm an alien from outer space dropped into my body, and I have the same set of like roles and responsibilities. How would I go and do it? That to me is a helpful thought experiment. Like, I think it's similar to like, you know, one way to think about running a business or any job that you have is like, if you were just a smart alien from outer space dropped in your business, like what would you do more? What's the first thing that you would do more of? What's the first thing you would stop doing? What's the first, like, who would you go and hire tomorrow? Who would you let go of? Like, what would you do differently from what you're doing right now? I think it's a helpful I guess, remove sense of self, remove sense of ego. So I'm not like, I try to not be like interpersonally intertwined in it, more just see it as like a role. I have a responsibility as a leader to be a certain way, and I'm going to drop into that and do that. And it's not about me versus you. It's like the tennis players, or it's the you versus the TSA agent. It's like, if you were that TSA agent, you'd be doing the same thing that they're doing. If you were on the other side of the tennis court, you'd be doing what you're doing. So like, I say it with compassion. I say it with understanding that the person on the other side is probably going through their own whatever, but like my job is to do my job. And so I'm going to say the things that I am supposed to say for my job.
What about in the personal context?
When there's
difficult conversations that happen, let's say it's a situation of you getting upset at your wife for something that she didn't do.
Something she didn't do?
Yeah, just like the example you were mentioning before about like you were getting mad at her because you were placing the blame of a difficult conversation that you didn't have on her. So now you have another difficult conversation of now you have to
like make
amends with your wife. What does that look like?
Oh, well, that's a different kind of uncomfortable. One of the most powerful things you can do is own it. Own your shit. Just extreme accountability. Like own the fact that you upset someone else. And it is really powerful. You can't say it enough times when you know that you upset someone. Like you can't say it enough times. Acknowledging it, like that person needs to hear it. And as you're trying to unpack what happened and explain it, like it doesn't matter. Even if you think you're still 100% right and that like you were misheard or misunderstood, like still acknowledging that the other person is hurt is really important. Like I think there's, I don't know. So for instance, I'll be busy day at work, like very, very like stressed. Oh, here's an example. Like I sometimes wake up earlier or like early in the morning before my wife does. And so I'm already like in work mode at whatever, at like 6 a.m., whatever. And then she wakes up and like, if I'm overly like brusque with her, I'm not trying to be, it's just like, I already got into like three different debates with this person, that person. I'm already like going, I already got this like person asking me weird questions out of left field. I already got someone, whatever. I'm already doing some stuff. So I'm not trying to be mean. I'm not trying to be rude to my wife. It's just that like I am in the wrong mode for where she's at. And like, it's on me to own that, that like, yeah, I cannot change. I wasn't trying to do wrong. Like I'm, you know, not guilty. Like it wasn't malintent. I wasn't trying to like shit on her morning, but I did. And like just owning that and like acknowledging that and like saying that and speaking it and verbalizing. And then you can make the choice of like, okay, am I willing to sacrifice? Am I willing to be different? Am I willing to be a little bit more flexible, plastic to be within the energy vibe of this overall house that I operate and be a better teammate member of this house? Can I do that while also being good at whatever war I'm fighting on my like laptop, on my Zoom calls, on my email? Like, can I put that away here? Can I be both? Can I have some duality? Can I be a certain way inside of this context? And can I jump into this other way in this other context? I think the answer to the question is just because we're talking about interpersonal conflict and how to have those uncomfortable conversations. The main thing I keep coming back to is own it, like acknowledge it, just own it. Even if you don't think it's your fault, own the fact that you have an effect on people, even if that effect is very different from your intent. And you can even explain that. You can explain that your intent was X, but still own the outcome of what actually happened. And then take it from there. But that's always going to be a good starting point to get into any kind of uncomfortable situation. Just like own the fact that the things that you're doing are affecting other people.
Yeah. It's interesting because we're living in more worlds than ever before, where it's like you're living in the world of business, you're living in the world of social media, and you're doing that also while in the same house as your wife. And then if you're in the world of running, and it's like you could experience all those worlds in a 1 hour time frame where your wife is still sleeping. Yeah. And so I think the concept of like living in multiple worlds is one that's under discussed because it's so new and because we don't have the right phrasing or terminology or ideas around like what does it mean when I'm on social media for 30 minutes and that actually changes the world and how my brain is operating. And then I have to come back to the physical world. I was going to say the real world. That's all what's real and what's, you know. So, and like, what are the best ways to go from world to world? It's like, these are, what are the best ways to go from world to world?
That's
huge. Do you
have
any ideas?
Well, I think that's a really good way to put it. First of all, I think the good insight that we have so many stacked on top of each other, and even inside of the digital world, you like switch from like work Slack over to Reddit, over to 4chan, over to Instagram. It's like you might be a different person on all of those. You might be anonymous on one of those. Like you might be very different. And so you're already like switching all of these modes. One idea is that try to not switch in the sense like can you be solid? Can there be more sameness than not across them where you're not even having to switch? Like you're able to, I guess in the best possible world, you're really based in all of it. So like, yeah, your work conversation might have more EBITDA, customer acquisition costs, but more jargon, but can you have the same energy and presence where it's not this like crazy whiplash to then go pick up your daughter from daycare? Like it's the same, like you're caring about you're caring about your EBITDA the same as you're caring about your daughter. Maybe not to that extent, but maybe it's like but what I really mean to say is like the words, the energy that you carry, like the way that your voice carries, the way that you're treating everything can actually be, you can be flat across all of it. Checking your EBITDA is not that different from changing a diaper, is not that different. And can you have like a sameness about it where it's all just chopping wood and carrying water and like, oh, are you grumpy about the EBITDA and you're happy, or maybe you're happy about the EBITDA, grumpy about the diaper, but you're happy about feeding your daughter because it's fun. No, you're mad because it's messy. You like your bookkeeper, you don't like your bookkeeper, but it's like maybe you just let all of that go and then you're able to more float across it all because you're not packing it all with a bunch of unnecessary emotional responses to it. And if you can just see it more flat, you can maybe more easily switch. I'm just thinking through it live with you, Danny. Like maybe you just, if you're more flat on all of it, then you're able to flip through all of the modes of reality more easily because you're not like having to put so much away when you switch from one world to the other.
Yeah, well, that makes me think about how honesty leads to trust, leads to speed, which is related to you and your worldview. It's like if you're honest about living in one world and another world, then you can go faster because you can switch from world to world easier because you're not lying to anyone.
I agree. Honesty leads to trust, leads to speed is so core that like I think I met a lot of smart people and I think no one is smart enough to be able to consistently, effectively lie really well without spending a ton of energy on like creating a second.
How did Bernie Madoff do it?
He got caught eventually.
Yeah,
I think.
But I wonder if he expanded energy like with the lie or he was just like living in it.
Yeah, I think what you do if you go full sociopath is you just, the lie becomes your reality.
Yeah.
I think what's really hard is like flipping between the two where like, I think it's hard. Because if you have two truths that are at odds with each other, then you're.
Then you don't do anything.
Yeah, because like what did I tell you last time we met? Did I tell you I'm a chef or did I tell you I'm a fifth grade teacher? Did I tell you I'm garbage man? Like, which am I? And having to like keep track of that, I think is like an impossible amount of mental overhead that even like super smart people can't. And I think some people are smart to a point where they're dumb because they think that they can outsmart the game by like tricking it. I basically don't believe in like trick plays or anything. I think like, being honest, I think little things like I was just very honest with my employees, with my investors. Like everyone knows what's going on inside of the business where I don't feel like, I feel like by being honest, like we can all solve the same problems together. We can all communicate on the same set of assumptions, the same set of facts. And we can all rally to solve it together as opposed to like having to, I don't know, have some like narrative around it or persuade people that it's something that it's not. Yeah. I think trust. I think you just move faster if you're not like creating a reality or creating a false narrative around reality as you're living it. I think if you can just like live pure, I think what's hard is just saying what's real. I think articulating actual reality is what's hard, and getting people to rally around a mission, like you're George Washington crossing the Delaware. It's like actually explaining what the Delaware River is, actually explaining like what's going on today, the weather, the storms, the this, the that, like actually like explaining battle plan, like actually doing that and like assembling a lot of people around that, like that is already super duper hard. If you can actually just do that, like get a bunch of smart people to rally around a plan to go attack real reality in a certain way, like that's hard. If you put layers on top of that about like, about lying about this or creating this false narrative around that, like it's complicated.
It starts with truth with oneself. In order to get somebody to do something for you that's going to lead to your together betterment, because the truth of reality is this, it's like, how are you lying to yourself? You can't possibly lead that group of people anywhere if you're being false with yourself, because people could feel it. People could understand. People will be able to sense it a mile away, and then they won't trust you because you're lying to yourself.
Yeah.
And then if you're lying to yourself, then how am I supposed to trust anything you say?
Yeah. And I think people can smell that out from a like long ways away. If you're being true with yourself, if you're being true with them. And I think if people feel like you shifted with them, it takes a long time to rebuild trust. I think you can erode trust like 10 times faster. I think if you do one nice thing, like even like little things like following up, like it's just little things like telling people that you'll send them the thing you said that you'd send them. Oh, I'll text you that later. And like actually texting them, like the little things I think go a long way. But I also say that like little erosions on that, I think hurt more than the positive things, if that makes sense. It's like showing up. If we say we're going to meet somewhere and like we both show up there, okay, a little bit of trust, like, okay, you're reliable. But if I don't show up one day and like, I just don't tell you, like those are not equivalent. Like I'm going to need to show up like 10, 20 more times. You'll still probably remember and be like, yo, that was really weird. That one time that we were going to meet up, I didn't hear anything from you and you just didn't show up. Like what the F was that? Like it would take 10, 20 other times. How weird is that?
Yeah. I don't know. It's because it's like pattern matching. And we're like pattern matching and because we need to know that the people that we're associating with are telling the truth to themselves.
Yeah.
Why do you have a tattoo of San Francisco on your body?
I have a tattoo of the San Francisco Marathon, which was the first marathon I ran. And it's on my left arm, my inner bicep. And the marathon really changed me. The first time I really ran it, I think there was life for me before marathoning and then after. And there was, I realized as it was happening, and then especially afterwards, not just like the running part. I think we've talked about a lot of aspects like in a deeper inside of running, just beyond just like, oh, I like running 26 miles at a time. That there was something inside of running that changed me. I think there was something in that process that made me, I just feel like I gained like decades of wisdom in like, I don't know. I trained, you know, 4 or 5 months for it, you know, like from the start. And I realized, I think I was just so, I was so excited at how it went and just realized, I think what was crazy for me was like, I hit the time. Like it was really important to me to run a sub-3-hour marathon. And it was super important to me. And what's crazy is like, I never did that once in training. And the fact that I'd done all this training and I really trusted the process and I just ran every day. But I think, you know, a lot of marathon runners, you run, like, you do like a weekend long run, but it's never nearly as fast as your marathon speed. You'll, like, if you do like a weekend 20 miler, you go a lot slower than your like target race pace. So I do like, and then that's like your longest run. Then you're doing a lot of shorter runs during the week. So like, I never had like touched it. I just trusted the process. I did a lot of running, and then it was just magic to me that like, I never once did the thing that I wanted to do. I like kind of threw darts at it for 4 months. And then on race day, it all came together. And to me, that was transcendental. That was life changing for me. Huh. To realize that this big goal, because I think there was a part of me, like a more young boyish part of me, that were like, if you want something, like try and go grab it now today.
Oh, I see.
Try and go get it. Like try. And I think I just learned like this profound sense of patience in company building, family building, everything, that like that gold that you want on the mountaintop, you can have it. You can totally have it, but you maybe can't have it today. And it's not a matter of like, pull an all-nighter and lace your shoes up really tight and go like chase it like a dog. I think a younger version of me, like I would get into something, I would just like attack it like freaking Hercules. And then you're like, but then peter out really quickly, like fizz out really quickly, and realizing that other modality. I think I just click with me with marathoning in particular and changed my approach to everything.
At what point did you know you were going to get the tattoo?
It was later. I think it was like after I had integrated this into my life and realized that it changed me. It was some. I got it probably a year and a half later.
So it wasn't like at the mile 20 mark, you're like, I'm getting this tattoo, I'm going to finish
it. No, I took it a big decision. Like, no, my parents... No one, my brother's sister, no one has a single tattoo. And my parents were pretty anti-tattoo. My parents had a lot of opinions, I'm realizing. They're just like anti-tattoo. I don't know why. I'm trying to think what they would say. I don't know, just like, don't mess up your body. Like, it's permanent. Like, you don't need that. Just, you know, yeah, don't. I didn't ask them, obviously. I'm an adult at that point. I just told them afterwards. And my mom, my parents were actually surprisingly cool with it. I think at that point, I'd just like done enough weird. My parents also like... I wouldn't run a marathon or wouldn't do a lot of other like random stuff that I've done. So I let them know afterwards, and they were very cool with it. They're just, oh, that's Michael.
What voices in your head from your parents would you wish weren't there?
Sometimes I think that they're more cautious than they need to be. So maybe I'm cautious sometimes on things where I don't need to be. Although I've also made a concerted effort. I heard this saying that like, you're the way that you are either because of your parents or because of your parents.
In spite of them or because of them.
Yeah. And so yeah, there's certain aspects I think I've like made a concerted effort to be more like, it's like out there. Like, it's interesting. Like my parents are like, when it comes to like a trip, like they'll really plan a trip. Maybe it's also a generational thing. I don't want to harp on them. It's like, a trip's a big deal versus me. It's like, oh, there's something going on in New York like in 3 days. Like, I got an important meeting and maybe I can string together another couple things. Oh, a friend lives there I haven't caught up with. All right, we're going to New York.
Yeah.
And I just, and then on the flip side of it, I also can't really plan like 4 months unless it's like a really important thing. But like, I think my parents are the opposite, where it's like, oh, we're going to on this trip. Like, it's like the theme for months is like that this trip is happening, and they're really like thinking about it. Maybe that's just generational, honestly. Like, I really don't want to I think a lot of things changed in the last decades that have transpired. I think around attitude towards travel in particular, but I think in general, just move a little bit different, a little bit quicker on certain decisions. I don't think I'm all the way through, but yeah, to answer your question, like maybe I'm still like sometimes stutter step more than if I had a different set of parents, but I love my parents. I don't know. I'm not tripping.
And how do you think it will the things that you've taken from your parents, how do you think those will, what parts of those do you want to pass on to your two-year-old?
My parents were really big on family dinner every night.
I love that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you have a great family as well, it sounds like. So like a lot of the warmth, just having the little things matter. And my wife and I talk about this a lot, that like, it's not the big trip to Disneyland or whatever that stay. It's the little things. If you just think about what memories do you have from like a very young age? They're like random. I don't know about you, but it's like, to me, it's like you're randomly like peeling a Band-Aid off at some point in the sandpit. You're randomly like waiting. You're like in church staring at the ceiling for hours. It is like these very random, is whatever you think are these core memories that you're giving your kids, like those probably are not the core memories. The core memories are like weird, random, like this, like it's not even it's not Disneyland. It's like the trip in the car to Disneyland, or like the, I don't know. It's the little interstitial things. You can't make the big things happen. You can't make a memory form. It's interesting how, like, what ends up sticking as a memory or not. Yeah.
Yeah, we have much less control over that.
Yeah.
Than what we think we do when we're planning these big trips, or as a parent. I'm not a parent, but I would assume that, like, I'm going to give my kids some great memories. And the truth is,
the great memories is like that one time that you made macaroni and cheese with them and you let them stir the pot.
Right.
Like, it, you know, it's a little thing. And so I think it's important to be there for those little things, that like the, you know, having dinner together, doing like the regular things together, just like showing up, showing up for the little things is what really matters. I think my parents were really big on that, really good at that.
Yeah. That's beautiful. I like to end these podcasts with challenges. A challenge points to the place in your heart you believe someone should take this conversation and actually do something with it in their own life. Does a challenge come to mind from anything we spoke about or something we haven't covered yet?
Run a marathon.
Yeah.
I think it'll learn a lot about yourself. And I think it'll either force you to become a certain type of person, and that might be beautiful. Like you might tap into some really special thing, or it'll cook you and you'll learn something else. Like you'll learn. But I think everyone has, I think most people have like a marathon in them.
Mm.
I don't think it's easy. I think some people have a much better advantage due to whatever body type and whatever. But I think a lot of people, like most people, have it in them at some level, because it's really about just putting in the work. And I think I challenge people to go run. I challenge people to go run a marathon and to see who they are on the other side of that.
It's apropos that I'll be running my first marathon on December 2nd.
Let's go.
On Saturday. This episode might go live a day before.
Wow.
Any final pieces of advice for me, particularly around the mile 20 to 22 mark?
You got to drink your ketone IQ, for sure. We barely talked about this, which I love, by the way. We kept it on a lot higher level. Ketone IQ, awesome. High performance energy, no sugar, no caffeine. It stacks well with, you know, your typical carb, sugar, gel stuff. Like, get your nutrition dialed really well. Run with your nutrition full loaded beforehand. Have you done that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you feel comfortable with your...
I need some Martens. That's why I'm going.
Yeah, get some Martens. That stuff's great. If you have to go pee, just don't
pee.
Yeah. Just pee your pants.
Pee your
just
pants.
Run. Just run.
Do you know how many podcasts I've done that I've peed my pants during?
Wow. Me too.
Maybe like 10 to 20.
Really?
Honestly.
Really? Actually?
Okay. Yes.
Okay.
Actually.
Yeah.
Only one or two in person.
Okay.
But.
Was today one of them?
No.
Okay. Nice. Same.
But I would let you know.
Yeah. Okay. I would also let you know. Wow. Well, then it should be no.
So don't go, don't use a porta potty.
Yeah. What I tell myself is like, if I have to go pee, then I either have to go pee. Okay. The common response is like, oh, it's hard to go pee while you're running. Like mm-hmm. I need to stop and whatever, pee. It's like, well, then you don't have to go pee. Just mm-hmm. keep running. Mm. Keep running until you have to go pee so bad that your body makes you pee mm. while you're still cruising.
I see. Yeah, that's no problem.
Yeah,
I can
just go.
There's no worries with that. No. And then anything else on the mind side of things? Or just like things that I won't think of because it's my first one?
Gratitude. Just keep coming back to gratitude. Just be really, you're in a healthy body. You trained a lot. You're there. You have the day dedicated for it. Like just see it as like just be thankful for all of it. Like all of it. Mm. Like everyone who's out there cheering for you, everything. The fact that you like closed down all the streets, the fact this is a celebration of humanity, the human spirit, the fact that you even get to feel out of breath or pounding pavement or anything, just be grateful for it. Because there's going to be a point when you can't run a marathon anymore and you're going to think, man, it would be cool to just go let her rip for 26 miles. So that do that. Like be in that 82-year-old version of yourself looking back on you now and like live the best, make that 82-year-old version of yourself proud. Like go suck the marrow out of that moment. And yeah, I think just gratitude, like come back to gratitude. That's I think the most powerful antidote to any kind of like pain or suffering or anything. It's not like it's a little bit different from happiness, right?
Oh, so
like, happiness I feel like is like it's hard to force happiness. It's like, okay, be happy, like how? I think gratitude, you can start counting the things. It's like, well, this is more of an action to it. Smiling is like, okay, I'll put on a happy face. I'll like force a smile. But like gratitude can be like, you can just like be grateful for your heart beating. Mm-hmm. Isn't that amazing that your heart is beating?
How is that happening?
Exactly. Like what's that spark of electricity that just keeps going that.
It's like, we didn't do that.
No.
We didn't create a heartbeat for ourselves that is going right now in this moment. But it's here.
Right.
And your consciousness is directed at somewhere.
Exactly.
So do you think there's a significance of 32 billion years getting us to this moment right here?
I think there is.
I think there is too. So what happens after we go, leave this body?
I think the universe will keep experiencing itself. I think that feeling that you have, that I have, is universal and that will continue as it always has. And it's not going to be inside of your exact manifestation, your exact like meat sack of a body, but the sense of spark, like that electricity that's making your heart beat, like there's an abundance of that in the universe, and that's going to keep going for a long, long time. And yeah, that's something I think about while we're still all here, is like, I think about with my wife, like it's like, I love her. She loves me the way that like Anthony and Cleopatra loved each other, the way it's like this ancient thing. So like, we think our love is like really special. Like, Amy, I love you. Michael, I love you. Like, we think it's really special, and it is. And at the same time, it's the same specialness that like everyone has always had. Like, we didn't invent this. It feels very real to us. It's like the way that you're eating a piece of pepperoni pizza feels really real to you, but you know a billion other people have eaten a slice of pizza this week and it felt just as dope to them. And like, it doesn't, like your experience is still very real to you, but also everyone else feels that same way too. So like, the love that you're feeling, the cheese pizza that you're eating, that everything is going to continue on. That you're renting it. You're getting to ride it for a little while and be grateful for that. And then when your turn is off the ride, like, don't worry, the ride's going to keep going. And then I don't know where you go. Like, where is the you? Like, the you, I don't know. Some, like, other people's egos will also exist. And like, your ego is not going to exist, unfortunately, at a certain point. But like, the main thing, the main reason that you even like being you is just the energy of the fact that you're on the ride. Like you're on the roller coaster. The roller coaster is what's fun. You happen to be a meat sack on it. It's not you that's fun. It's the roller coaster. It's the roller coaster that's fun. It's the fact that you're letting it all in that's fun. So at some point, like you got to get off the roller coaster. But there's no you without like that's just the shell. The ride's gonna keep going.
Yeah, yeah, I think so too. The ride's gonna keep going, but also like the you that's experiencing itself is when you say that about love. It's also true for all of the experiences.
Yeah,
like you're the same. You're experiencing the same way that I'm experiencing in our own version of that, as well as every human being listening to this or watching. It's like we're all experiencing some version that's our own vantage point. But that experience, who is the one experiencing that?
I don't know. I try to dial into that, try to like see your own life through that vantage point. I think we touched on that earlier too, is like trying not to get entangled, trying not to have like to play your part, but also like see yourself playing your part, like have that own vantage on yourself, like see the universe experiencing itself, see you experiencing yourself as yourself, and be serious about it. I think it's good to live a serious, like go try to run the fastest marathon. Why? I don't know why, but you should, you know what I mean? Like if you think you can run a faster marathon, go do it. And if you like it, like it matters because everything,
this is why it matters. It matters because of this quote by Steve Prefontaine. Is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah.
He said, and it hit me at such a deep level, to give anything less than the best or to give anything less than your best is to sacrifice the gift.
Beautiful.
I don't know if you could say it better than that, right?
Can't. It's true for runners. It's true for everything. It's true for violinists, it's true for chefs, it's true for being a family member. Just give it your best, because otherwise you're not doing duty to the gift that you were given. And I think it's really beautiful. Yeah, that because you're gonna get to a spot in the marathon where it's like, why does anyone care if I run this mile slower? Or is that, it's like you do, damn it. Like that part of the dance is like being the best dancer, and it's true for everyone. And there's something really beautiful about a life where you're just really dancing. Like you signed up for it. You're doing it. Like do it for real. Like do the damn thing. Like really do it. And yeah, if you had signed up instead for a cooking class or an improv class or whatever, instead of a marathon, okay, do the hell out of that. Like whatever you do, do the hell out of it. That's, I think, the non-negotiable. Like you can pick whatever you want to do. Kobe Bryant picked basketball. Like, cool. Gordon Ramsay picked cooking. Like pick whatever, but like do the hell out of it. Cause yeah, I you can't say it better than the Prefontaine quote. Like you gotta do it with that same, the same zest, the same. Just you gotta make good on your gift.
Yeah. Well, I enjoyed hitting the tennis ball with you today, or with myself. It's been a pleasure, and I'm very grateful for it. Where should we send people to connect with you further and to buy your awesome products?
Check out. Personal Instagram is Michael D. Brandt. Give me a follow there. I love hearing what people are up to on their biohacking journey, on their just general journey in life, figuring things out, entrepreneurship, whatever you're up to. Love hearing from people. My company is called Health Via Modern Nutrition. We make a product called Ketone IQ. It's high performance energy, and it's really cool stuff. Very natural feeling. It's a fermented ketone. It's the same ketone you make when you're fasting. Feels really nice in your brain. Your brain loves ketones when they're present. So give it a try. We're in a lot of stores, gyms. You can find us on our website. That's at hvmn.com.
There you go. All linked down below. Really appreciate you coming on, and really grateful to have experienced this. It was a profound one. I had some tears in the beginning. I don't know if you'd caught that, but I really appreciate you.
It was great, man. No, I really appreciate where we went with this convo.
Thank you, man.